Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and its rotating team of hosts. Today on Central Coast Voices, join host Mario Espinosa-Kulik and his guests for a conversation on the environmental, public health, and economic risks of expanded offshore oil and gas development here off our Central Coast. I want to invite you to be part of the conversation today. You can listen, learn, and call in if you'd like between 1 and 2 p.m. You can join the conversation by calling us at 805-781-3875, or you can email questions for after the show to voices@kcbx.org. And with that, let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Thank you, Brad. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik, and you are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, we're talking about offshore oil and gas development off of our coast and why this issue is showing up again right now. You might not know this, but in late January 2026, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, also known as BOEM, issued calls for public input and industry nominations on potential offshore oil and gas leasing areas off Central and Southern California. Then, on February 26, 2026, BOEM announced it is beginning a programmatic environmental review process that could inform future federal lease sales off California, with a public comment period currently open through March 30, 2026. Joining me for today's show, we have Charles Varney, chair of the Slow Surfrider Chapter and Oceano Vehicle Free Beach Campaign Chair, as well as Gianna Patchen, Sierra Club Santa Lucia Chapter Coordinator. Welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to be here.
Thanks for having us, Mario.
I'm so honored for both of you to be here. And just for our listeners, if you'd like to join in and ask a question of our guest today, we encourage all callers to express your comments, questions, points of view by calling 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. I wanted to start us off with asking Charles a question, and that was, one, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners in your own words, and then also, just out of curiosity, what brought you into the work that you do?
Sure. Well, I was born into a working-class Italian family in Santa Barbara in 1945, and my dad's name was Silvio, which in Italian means man of the forest. My mom was born on a ranch up on the Rogue River in Oregon, and they both loved the outdoors, and so I spent a lot of time as a kid up in the Sierras and the backcountry of Santa Barbara, and, you know, without knowing it, that just, I was just kind of socialized into a love of nature, and that just grew in my life, and I know exactly when I became an environmentalist, and that was in 1969 when the Union Oil Platform Holly blew out in the Santa Barbara Channel and deposited, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil on the beaches of the Santa Barbara coast, and all of my surfing beaches were covered with oil. And I thought, this is wrong. And when I heard how UNICAL was responding to it, Fred Hartley said, well, what's the big deal about a few birds getting covered with oil? I thought, okay, I'm going to pay attention to this. And so, you know, in school, I was majoring in sociology, and which is really also called social ecology. Just as I became an activist in the 60s, environment was part of that, and that continued with me. And I've been real active the last 20 years of my life, especially here in San Luis Obispo County, focusing on stopping the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure in the county with Measure G, with stopping the Phillips 66 from building an oil train terminal. And it's a passion, and it is for the betterment of and protection of the earth and the people who live here. So that all comes from love.
That's amazing. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that with us. I wanted to also ask Gianna, you know, what got you into the role that you do with the Santa Lucia chapter of Sierra Club, but also just how you came into this work.
Yeah, I'm happy to share that. So I have the immense privilege of being the Sierra Club's Santa Lucia chapter coordinator. That means our chapter jurisdiction is San Luis Obispo County, and we work here locally on moving forward the Sierra Club's mission. So that's to educate, inspire, and empower humanity to preserve the natural and human environment. And I get the immense privilege of getting to focus on SLO County here and be in collaboration with activists across the state and across the nation. So I got into this work. I am a Cal Poly alumni. I studied biology, and I think a lot of biologists will find that once you start examining people and the environment, it's really hard to separate what we see in science from the policy decisions that need to be made to move forward a healthier community, and that includes ecosystems and people. So after I graduated from college, I was able to work with the Northern Chumash Tribal Council on the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary campaign for 3 years, working with them in various capacities. And we saw that campaign come to fruition. The sanctuary was designated a little over a year ago. And that was my entry point to advocacy, to working alongside local communities and led by tribal groups. You know, how do we move forward positive protections for our earth and see local community voices as a key moving force in that? So that was my entry point to this work. And I once was a collaborator with the Sierra Club, and now I get to work for the Sierra Club. And get to be here with y'all today. So thank you.
That's awesome. Congratulations. I also, just in thinking about environmentalism and environmentalists, for folks that might not be too familiar with the term, even like this, the reasons why to become an environmentalist, Charles, would you like to share for folks is what that is?
Well, I think that, I mean, going back many, many decades ago, you can look at the battle in America to establish the national parks. There was a whole group of industrialists who were very against any restrictions in terms of exploiting the resources of Earth. And, you know, people who were concerned about the forests being cut down, mining, and the pollution that comes from that. Well, there was just a basic notion that we need to preserve big pieces of land in order to not only just kind of maintain the balance on Earth, but to protect the flora and fauna from exploitation that was ultimately going to be unsustainable. And can see that, so that played out over decades, but it wasn't until 1969, as a result of the oil spill in Santa Barbara, that Richard Nixon created the Environmental Protection Agency, and we finally started having law that we could go to. Surfrider was formed in 1994, and is now the leading ocean protection, safe oceans, access to oceans, access to beaches organization in the world. Sierra Club, and Gianna can speak to this, was, you know, founded by John Muir and others way back when to protect our national parks, to create and protect our national parks like Yosemite. Mm-hmm. So it's been, and as it's evolved, we realize that the burning of fossil fuels has actually changed the climate, and we are responsible for that. We are the species that evolved on Earth that has had the most negative impact of any species in evolutionary history. And we are aware of that. We are conscious of that. Science has proved that. And still, we struggle with doing the right thing to try and do our part to keep things in balance for future generations of our species and all of the species that we share space with here. Unfortunately, climate change, fossil fuel burning has initiated the sixth great extinction on Earth, and we are in that extinction process now, and it will be playing out over the next few hundred years. Climate change that's taken place so far, we know is going to impact out over the next at least 1,000 years, and the more we continue to burn fossil fuels, the more we're pushing that window out.
Wow.
For our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
Yeah, that's incredible. I've been thinking about the generational impacts that we have and in just our behavior as human beings and the consequences that maybe folks might not be aware of their actions. Gianna, I wanted to ask you just with the work that you do with the Sierra Club and a bit about your knowledge about the conservation efforts and maybe areas around Slo County that are protected.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have here in San Luis Obispo County amazing outdoor spaces. We've got the ocean. We've got Carrizo Plain National Monument. We have open space. It is really special to live in a place where you can walk to a trailhead from downtown San Luis Obispo. You can drive 17 minutes to the beach. And in that, we have an immense responsibility, in my opinion, as community members to defend these places. And at the Sierra Club, we really see there's two sides to that, right? We have the knowledge and organizational resources to help drive advocacy strategy. Like, how do we have good environmental policies that give us the foundation to fight, like Charles was saying, the legal foundations to fight for these places, to push for better protection for our environment. And I think a really crucial element to that that is being talked about more and more in the environmental space is that environmental issues and social justice issues and public health issues are all intertwined. And so really when we talk about protecting public lands, protecting our oceans, we are also talking about protecting clean air for all of us to breathe. Having clean water for people to swim in and fish in, and having strong local economies that rely on people wanting to come visit this place and healthy ecosystems to fish and explore. So really in this effort to protect our local places, I have to emphasize that we're also working to protect our local people. And those two fights need to be interconnected. And we see it with things like attempts to stop offshore oil drilling, right? The impacts of an oil spill are public health and environmental because we are part of this ecosystem. We are part of this. It is not a separate thing. We are united. So really in our local efforts, we strive to bridge those gaps, to remind and bring folks out into the outdoors. We lead a hike program, which is really an entry point of, like, how can we help you access these wonderful places that are near all of us and help our community feel that connection as part of the ecosystem that is our Earth, right? So it's really a cool connection here in our local advocacy with the Sierra Club and our many partners that we are seeing really that strategy, policy side of things, but it has to be connected to empowering local community members, teaching y'all how we can all use our voice together and how we can get outside and enjoy these wonderful places and remind ourselves that we are part of this ecosystem and we have the power to help defend it.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guests today are Charles Barney, chair of the Slo Surfrider Chapter and Oceano Vehicle Free Beach Campaign Chair, and Gianna Patchen, Sierra Club Santa Lucia Chapter Coordinator. Today we're discussing the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, who has started a federal review that looks broadly at what offshore leasing could involve in Northern, Central, and Southern California planning areas. If you have any questions about this or any related topics around environmentalism today, you can call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices at kcbx.org. We had scratched the surface of the BOEM at the beginning of our show today. What exactly is the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and what are they doing?
Jana, do you want to lead off on that?
I'm happy to lead off on that. So the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is a federal agency that is tasked with managing energy production in our ocean across the entire United States. And right now, that agency has received a directive from the Trump administration to expand oil and gas drilling across the United States. We have seen in the last few months a specific target for Alaska, California, and the Gulf of Mexico as target areas to expand oil and gas drilling. And this is a really crucial time for us to be paying attention to what the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is moving forward, because they're moving forward at a speed that is atypically fast. We are seeing the process. They do have to legally go through a process of review and public notice, but it is moving quickly. So we had a public comment back in January. We had another public comment in February, and now we have another public comment period in March, all about trying to expand offshore oil drilling. So really, Charles and I and our organizations are tasked with helping inform y'all that this is happening. And within our own organizations, talking strategically on how do we prevent this from moving forward? How do we remind folks again that oil and gas drilling is a huge impact, not only to the environment. This is not just an environmental issue. It is also a public health and local community economy issue. I'll pop it over to you, Charles, if you want to add any more.
Oh, I think that was great.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask just about more clarification in terms of offshore drilling and the impact that might have in terms of the beaches and the place we call home here on the Central Coast. If you could share with our listeners why this is an issue that is worth paying attention to.
I'll say a little bit about it, and I know Gianna has lots of good stuff to share as well. But first of all, the state of California owns and controls all of the ocean off of our coast for 3 miles out. I think I'm right there. And maybe it's 5 miles. Gianna, what is it, 3 or 5? Do you remember?
I will pull it up and let you know in just a sec.
but we're talking about federal waters, and they start beyond our state water limits. California has a law that there's no more oil drilling production in state waters. So the federal waters are out there, and that's what the Bureau of Energy Management, Ocean Energy Management, is focused on, and that's where the leases will be. And that's what there's a 90-day period of public comment opening up very soon on where the public, anybody can write to BOEM and tell them what their thoughts and feelings are about leasing new lands on the seabed for oil and mineral extraction. So there's opportunity for public input there. We know that.
Go ahead. I have a confirmation. Approximately 3 nautical miles off the coast of California. Those are state waters, and anything beyond that are federal waters.
Mm-hmm. This might be a good place to put in a very important fact, and I think this will be kind of mind blowing to people. The fact is, we don't need any more offshore oil leasing of lands. Right now, there are 12 million acres of federal waters under lease, and less than 20% of them are producing any oil. Additionally, there's almost 2,000 leases that oil companies already have that they can use to drill. And oil companies actually are not jumping, you know, chomping at the bit to get more oil leases because they have plenty. And this is like simply it's like selling these leases is somebody's making money off of it. But do we really need it? No, we're a country that is now exporting oil around the world. There's no shortage of fossil fuels in America. It's now into sell it to other people and let's make a profit off of it and let's burn it and let's accelerate climate change.
That's very important and shocking, you know, that not many more people are aware of that. We do have a caller from Cayucos named Michael regarding Tesla launching rockets in Paso Robles. Hi, Michael. You are on. Michael, can you hear us?
Mario, I think we lost him on the line, but the context of his call was that he had heard a report that Tesla may be launching rockets out of Paso Robles, and he wanted to get your panel's input on that possibility and that news, and if they knew anything about it.
Yeah. Gianna, Charles, do you have anything to say to that?
I know zero about that.
Yeah, I would say that's not the focus of our expertise in this space today, but I can share that likely what they're talking about is SpaceX, which is a different company owned, excuse me, by Elon Musk. And we are seeing efforts.
Hello, hello.
SpaceX.
Hi, Michael.
Expand.
I can hear you now.
Hi. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm on my iPhone. Hi there. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I listen regularly. I'm disabled in Cayucos. I'm 68 years old. Long time county resident since 1969, I think, was when my family arrived. And I wanted to say, you know, congratulations on your Sierra Club and environmentalist stuff. Stick with it. We've seen since I've seen, I remember the Santa Barbara and these other pollution affairs. And so don't give up. We need you environmentalists, and you get a cookie because it's very, very strong work. And it's not, it's an uphill climb, that stuff. But the question that I had and was, I'd heard a rumor and that Musk and the Falcon 9 folks who launch out of Texas and launch out of other places with sometimes disastrous pollution and stuff. And they were saying that Paso Robles Airport, to my stunning shock and awe that they would even consider it. I know Vandenberg and so forth. So I wondered if you had heard about that. And I've also mentioned definitely on opposing the offshore oil of any further type. So maybe I'll leave it at that and see what you think. I don't know. I'm happy to discuss it.
Thanks, Michael.
Sure.
I can attempt, Michael, to answer your question with the knowledge I have currently. And I just want to say thank you.
Sure.
I feel strongly, right, that we've got to keep this work up even when it's hard. And right now it's definitely hard. We are seeing efforts from SpaceX to expand their operations, certainly at Vandenberg. I'm not privy on exactly what's happening at the Paso Robles Airport. But I do know that there are, in the past, ties to potential SpaceX or military operations there, right? So it doesn't totally surprise me to hear that from you. But I can share that that is actually an effort that Sierra Club is engaging on because the impacts of these rocket launches and surrounding activities have environmental and actually public health and public infrastructure impacts. So that is an issue that's increasingly on our radar.
Yeah, you're the Sierra Club gal. Yeah, my work was as a journalist for many years, and you know the Bureau of Oceanic Energy Management. That's a new one, young folks. They create agencies in order to give themselves the choice that the public doesn't have to pay much attention to. And you learn that from the Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO, that when, like the Bureau of Land Management, for example, as far as the environment's concerned, it's just a clue as to that type of power play where the big oil's going down. Those are new agencies formed kind of like, oh, now we're going to make some decisions and these things happen. But again, thank you. And like the Vandenberg, you know, we see these launches on and on and on. And it's not like I have, you know, I grew up with the Apollo and some of the successful work that they've done. My grandfather worked at Vandenberg in I remember the spaceport when there was a senator's name when they designated a spaceport. In fact, I have science fiction novels where I write science fiction now. And but when I heard the rumor, I thought, you got to be kidding, you know, because Paso Robles Airport is beautiful out there, beautiful weather and stuff. But I wouldn't even consider it, you know. And then you look at the oil, the fracking going on in the valley there. They're changing the rules, and then it goes to the money. And it's going to be the money. And the oil corporations and stuff, you know, look at the animals off the coast here over the year, the sea lions and the lakes and so on. So I commend your work and stuff. And I don't know, I'm not launching off into space anytime soon.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks, Michael. Yeah.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you as well, Pete. Yeah.
All right, and so we just have a couple minutes before we go on break here, but I wanted to pass it back to Charles if you had anything to add related to the environmental risk that you had described before we got a caller.
We may not all know about them, but I mean we've been inundated with information about the impacts of fossil fuel on our lives. And of course, John and I are focused on the environment writ large, and it's something that we need to transform if we want to thrive on Earth. And I guess we can leave it at that for now. We'll have time to fill in some of those gaps when we get back.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we will be right back on Central Coast Voices.
And just a quick note here that federal funding for public media has been eliminated by Congress. This cut took place effectively on October of last year. Don't wait to become a new member of KCBX. You're not only going to join thousands of other listeners who support our station, but you will also help us reach our financial goal of $220,000 during the spring pledge drive. Donate now at kcbx.org, or you can call us at 800-549-8855 to do your part. It is our spring pledge drive, and we do need your support. Central Coast Public Radio and Central Coast Voices will continue in just a moment.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, we bring you our own State of the Union, what President Trump has achieved and dismantled during his second term in office. And we also look at what's at stake for the next 3 years and the future of our country. That's next time on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, actor Delroy Lindo. He's earned his first Oscar nomination after 50 years in film and theater for his role as a blues musician in Sinners. He'll talk about developing his character with director Ryan Coogler and what happened when a racial slur was shouted at him and Michael B. Jordan at the recent BAFTA Awards. Join us.
That is a look ahead today here on KCBX with Latino USA coming up at 2, followed by Fresh Air at 3, and then we'll have Marketplace for you at 4. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests here on Central Coast Voices. It seems like we're having a lively hour here. Mario, back to you.
Thank you, Brad. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We're here at Central Coast Voices. Our guests today are Charles Varney, Chair of the Slow Surfrider Chapter and Oceano Vehicle Free Beach Campaign Chair, and Gianna Patchen, Sierra Club Santa Lucia Chapter Coordinator. Today we've been discussing offshore oil production, and we know that environmental risk is not experienced equally, but when we talk about offshore oil, it's important to acknowledge who's most exposed and who's most protected from the potential impacts. To join in and ask a question of our guests, you can call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. Speaking of, we have a speaker, a caller named Gerald from Los Osos. Gerald, what's your question about offshore drilling?
My question is about the use of offshore electric turbines. I understand the Sierra Club supports that. And how can they discern that from offshore, discern it by the environmental impacts? I'd like to hear maybe some comments about how we can maybe support it, or is there other things we need to consider? Thank you.
I wasn't sure what he was asking. Are you asking about offshore wind energy?
Yes.
Yes, and okay. I understand that Sierra Club supports it, and I would like to understand why they support it and how we can support it if it is a conscientious thing to do environmentally.
Okay. Well, thank you for that question. And I'll just say quickly on behalf of Surfrider, we do support the development of offshore wind energy as long as it is done safely and environmentally correctly. The fact is that there is no industrial scale energy production that does not have some negative impacts. That just comes with the territory in terms of where the technology is at right now. But compared to offshore oil, offshore wind energy is hundreds of times more safe when it comes to environmental impacts. That's a position of Surfrider. I'll turn it over to my colleague at the Sierra Club.
Yeah, I'm happy to answer. Offshore wind has been a hot topic around the Central Coast of recent. You bring up a really crucial question, which is, like, as we are trying to transition away from the fossil fuel industry, which we know is driving the climate crisis, which we have seen the impacts of oil spills spread across our coasts many times here in California, we are in a position where we need to be creative in what we do to reach our energy demand. And renewables are a crucial direction, not only for the environmental impact reasons and for mitigating the climate crisis, but also affordability. We're seeing renewables be much lower than fossil fuels cost-wise. They are also an opportunity for energy security, right? So locally owned, we're creating it here in the United States, and we're using it here in the United States for the most part. And those renewable energy offers a lot of options. And so here at the Sierra Club, when we're in conversations about how do we move forward the renewable energy transition, offshore wind is a crucial part of that conversation for a couple reasons, right? One of which, we have pretty high energy demand in this country, and we need ways to be able to procure that energy to meet demand. But also because we see things like solar, we get a ton of sun during the day, but we don't get any sun at night. And so we have to have a diverse load of energy. Offshore wind, the wind blows most off our coast all the time, right? So we're always looking for opportunities to create reliable sources of energy that are renewable and reduce the impacts. Because as Charles said, all the ways we procure energy have impacts somewhere. And our job is to see where can we minimize those, where can we make the smart long-term decisions for public health and for environmental health. And so Sierra Club has a similar position to Surfrider. We are supportive of offshore wind as a needed piece of the renewable energy puzzle, and because we see it has significantly lower impacts than fossil fuel. You know, an oil spill has a very, very large impact area, and with offshore wind, we don't see the same impacts when problems occur. because it is technology, right? Things happen. We are human-made. And we also know that the number one impact to marine ecosystems right now is higher ocean temperatures, malnourish events for animals because the ocean currents and fish habits are changing. So it's like for whales, they can go through starvation events events due to that lack of change or that changing marine ecosystem. So we know that the climate crisis is really one of the hugest drivers of ocean impacts. And then, of course, like oil spills, pollution in our water is another huge impact to our ocean ecosystems. With something like offshore wind, it really prevents a lot of those harms. And it's an opportunity for us to look at an industry and say, okay, how can we do this better? And here at the Sierra Club, again, we have a similar stance. We support offshore wind as a needed piece in the puzzle, but we don't support every offshore wind project. We look at each project, we say, mm-hmm. Is this being done well? Is this sited in the right spot where it reduces the impacts? So it's not all or nothing. It's really a thoughtful approach here within Sierra Club, and I think I can echo Surfrider from what Charles said, as we're saying, like, how do we do this better? And we know we have to push for energy industries that are more thoughtful, and we have an opportunity to do that with offshore wind.
I think I'd just like to add to that, Gianna, that just some of the economic perspective on this, that it's pretty well known, at least among environmentalists, that big oil is funding a lot of the anti-wind energy pushback out there. And as Californians, and as for me especially, I guess, you know, being a native son of Santa Barbara, where we got the first massive offshore oil blowout, you know, flooding of crude oil, California is a hugely our coasts are huge economic producers in the form of in terms of recreation and tourism. There's 350,000 people employed in recreation and tourism along the coast. They get about $12 billion a year in wages. The gross domestic product of recreation and tourism for California is $24 billion a year. Talk to any coastal town that's had an oil spill and ask them, how was that for the economy? And what it does is it shuts it down. Tourists do not want to come to a beach that's full of oil. And then there are the carryover and kind of the ripple effect through the economy, that when a coastal town gets repressed, its economy is repressed because of that. Or even if it isn't a massive spill, if there's the leakage from offshore oil wells comes up on the beach, they're full of tar. Their kids are coming back when there's tar all over their feet. I mean, that's not good for tourism or recreation. And that doesn't happen with offshore wind. That's one big difference between them.
Thanks for your question, Gerald. Do you have anything else to say?
No, that's pretty much it. I thought it would be a lively conversation, considering it is, as the Sierra Club representative said, a topic. Thank you.
Thank you,
Gerald.
All right. So in terms of what we're talking about, I'm wondering, we've discussed who benefits from these offshore drillings. We've discussed about from our callers sort of the differences between offshore wind energy versus offshore oil energy. Is there anything our listeners need to know in regard to the personal and communal impacts of offshore drilling?
Well, I think that you know, on both, I mean, on an economic level, on a health level, on a survivability level, all of those things we have touched upon in terms of the choices that we make and the policies that we implement in terms of how do we want to address those, or do we even want to address them? Do we care about them? The current administration in Washington shows no sensitivity to those kinds of impacts. The current administration is actively fighting offshore wind development. We hear that from our, from the administration all the time, and has their working approach is drill, baby, drill. Again, there is actually probably plenty of oil to go around in the world right now, and we don't need to do more of it. We need to be focusing on the transition. And as long as it's drill, baby, drill, we're going in the wrong direction. So, it's not there's such a there is a real fact of people experiencing environmental anxiety and environmental depression. You know, it's a hard thing to take to it's hard to take it to heart. And so one of the and maybe this is just me speaking for myself, but there are a lot of folks who find that getting active helps mitigate that anxiety, that depression. And so, you know, I think that it may be, Mario, I'm not trying to direct things, but we've laid out a whole lot of the consequences. Mm-hmm. I think that in terms of I don't know how much time we have left, but to talk more about what kinds of positive actions can people take who want to do something about this, and Gianna, I'd like to hear your point of view on this too.
Yeah, Gianna, I did want to follow up with you about some of the specific public health concerns and safety. If you have just any brief comments related to, you know, we've been talking about ports, pipelines, refining process, a lot of the context and consequences, but in terms of the public health and safety of our communities, do you have anything more to add?
I can briefly add some on that. So with offshore oil drilling, we see public health impacts in a couple different ways. Of course, when an oil spill happens, when a large oil spill happens, we see some of those public health impacts right there on the beach, oil in the water and on the sand. But often oil facilities are having little bits of oil come out in our ocean along the pipelines on land, if there's oil trucking along our roads. And that is a likely impact throughout the entire life of an oil operating facility. We also see it with the refineries, right? What do we do with this oil once it's been pumped? The impacts of air quality, of opening up oil drilling, of the trucks that truck said oil. And that has a direct impact on frontline communities that are forced to breathe that air. And typically we see the heavy air quality impacts and sometimes groundwater, like the water we rely on for drinking. Those impacts are typically put upon low-income communities, historically, typically BIPOC communities, communities of color, and that is by design in our country and has been for a while. So really those public health impacts of air, water, safety on our roads, on our beaches, the brunt of those impacts are borne by certain communities, and our county is one of those communities on our coast that has been impacted and continues to be impacted by oil and gas infrastructure on land and in water. And we see that with increased rates of asthma, cardiovascular disease, cancers from the emitted air, excuse me, I'm getting a brain fart here, but the increased greenhouse gas emissions nitrogen oxide, other volatile compounds that are released into the air. And we see those impacts presently from offshore oil and gas operations as well as on land ones. And those have direct impacts on our communities. So I think I'll leave it there, but it's all interconnected for sure.
For sure. And Charles, do you want to add?
I'd just like to add a quick local perspective on this, because San Luis Obispo County has a long and sordid history with oil. In the 1920s, Avila Beach was the largest capacity oil shipping port in the world. In 1926, on Tank Farm Road, where there was a series of oil storage, these great big structures, they had a lightning strike, and it was the largest oil spill in the United States at that time. And there was an estimated 6 million gallons of crude oil that was caught on fire, and there was a river of fire going down San Luis Obispo Creek into Avila Beach. And then, of course, in 69, there was a Platform Holly blowout in Santa Barbara. Some of that oil came up, big tar balls came up onto San Luis Obispo County. In 1980, it was discovered that the Guadalupe Nipomo Dunes Complex was the victim of the largest oil spill in the history of the continental United States, when 12 million gallons of solvent that was used to soften up oil for pumping to the refinery was lost in transit and polluted, tens of thousands of acres out there. In 1986, San Luis Obispo citizens passed a initiative, Measure A, that required voter approval for any authorization of onshore support facilities for offshore oil and gas operations. And so, in other words, they can put – if the federal government can put new wells out there, but they're not going to be able to build any infrastructure in our county. In 1990, Avila Beach was discovered to be contaminated with 400,000 gallons of petroleum, diesel, and gasoline that had soaked out of storage tanks above the town. And then finally, in 2016, we have Measure G, which was a citizens' initiative to ban new oil infrastructure and drilling in San Luis Obispo County that I co-chaired with Natalie Reisner, and it was barely defeated only because Exxon and Chevron and Standard and the American Petroleum Institute spent $8 million to defeat it. And then finally, in 2017, Phillips 66 wanted to build an oil train terminal on the Nipomo Mesa and import the dirtiest crude oil on earth from Alberta, Canada, tar sands. And in collaboration, Surfrider, the Sierra Club, the Center for Biological Diversity, STAND, all came together, and the citizens were able to defeat that, and the Board of Supervisors voted not to give them a development project. So I don't think many people know about that history, but we have had our share of tough times with oil here in our county.
I appreciate that context for our listeners. I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. You'll be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode and all our past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcasts, including your smart speaker. You can follow along with our guests online and on social media. Learn more about the Slow Surfrider chapter and Oceano Vehicle Free Beach campaign by visiting slow.surfrider.org. And you can connect with the Sierra Club at www.sierraclub.org/Santa-Lucia and on Facebook and on Instagram at Slow Sierra Club, or YouTube and LinkedIn as the Santa Lucia Sierra Club. Returning to our show are our guests that we've had today. As Charles Varney, chair of the Slow Surfrider chapter and Oceano Vehicle Free Beach campaign chair, and Gianna Patchen, Sierra Club Santa Lucia chapter coordinator. You know, we started talking about this before that segment. I'd like us to consider how our listeners may have some guidance to making a practical first step towards responding to some of the issues that we've talked to about today. Charles, how can we begin?
Okay, well, you've given out our slow.surfrider.org. Go to our website. Just click on the links, and you can get information. We've got kits in terms of active actions that you can engage in. You can contact me directly through the website. We are going to be organizing. Surfrider is organizing nationally and locally to do what we can to stop more federal leasing of offshore waters. And that campaign is getting ready to kick off very soon. And there's lots of different ways that you can get involved in it. So I think that's the best that I can do.
And Gianna, what about for the Sierra Club?
I would encourage folks to, first and foremost, submit your comment opposing this offshore oil drilling plan. We are in an open public comment period until March 30th. If you go to Sierra Club Santa Lucia chapter.org or go to sc.org/sl-take-action, we have a page with how to submit your comment, suggested talking points, and so on and so forth. I really encourage all those listening to use your voice to push back against this. But you can use your voice in a couple different ways as well. This is the technical comment process, but change is made by community building and sharing these concerns with your neighbors, your friends, your family, your local elected officials. There are a lot of spaces where we encourage you to bring this up. Say like, oh, hey, I heard that there's an attempt to expand offshore oil drilling on our coast. You could talk about it with your boss, right? Like, our local businesses are going to be impacted if this is put into place. And flag this as not only a public health and environmental concern, but an economic concern. When we see projects like this go in, it is quite frequently local small businesses that are first impacted when problems occur. So I really encourage y'all to use your voice and give public comment, but also talk with your community and share your thoughts and concerns with each other. Talk about it. That's where change really begins. And then once you have that chit chat, just like Charles said, come out to Surfrider, Sierra Club, come join our events, come to meetings, shoot us an email. If you have questions or concerns, you can email me at sierraclub8@gmail.com. And we'd be happy if you want to get more involved to help find a place for you. You don't have to be a technical expert. You can bring your knowledge and your passions to this place, to our organizations, and we'd happily find a space to. There's no ending of work to do, and we'd gladly have your help. So, that's hope we'll work on this together.
Gianna, that was awesome, and I just want to acknowledge that you had brought up the idea of tribal-led advocacy for the Chumash Marine Sanctuary, and then also Charles, you were talking about a collaboration among different groups that stopped the oil transit in Nipomo at the Mesa. I'm just wondering, how can we communicate to our decision makers and our listeners and just people in general, like, what would effective local community advocacy look like against our anticipation of this offshore drilling and bad environmental policy?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we've been talking about are federal policies, which our Board of Supervisors have no authority over, right, or any our city councils. But that doesn't mean that they cannot speak on our behalf to those agencies. And then, of course, we have our local congressman, Salou Carbajal, and we have our state senators. Those are the people that represent us at the federal level. I think that they're probably all on pretty much the same page that Sierra Club and Sierra Club are on, maybe not absolutely, but pretty much so. And to continue to share our opinions and with our local elected representatives and encouraging them to take a position and to communicate that to our federal representatives is kind of the pipeline of influence that goes up that at least lets them know that we have their back and we want them to protect us in terms of that venue, and then doing what we can on our own. As Gianna was pointing out, I mean, they have a great setup at the Sierra Club. It's very user friendly to go in and just put down, write your note to Bureau of Energy Management.
And we have about just last words here before we wrap up our time together. But Gianna, do you have any closing remarks that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I encourage our listeners to find one small space where you want to get involved, a baby step in this. Those close to me have heard that phrase a lot in the last year plus. Find one spot, whether that's donating to an organization, showing up to a public meeting, talking with your neighbors, and find your baby step and then try to take another baby step if you can. It's piece by piece, and it can be really easy to get overwhelmed by these attempts to attack our local communities and ecosystems. But together with a lot of baby steps, I think we can make a difference here.
And how about you, Charles? What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
We know what the right thing to do is. And I would encourage everyone to do what you can to be on the right side of history for the time that we're living in, and be thinking of generations to come, and that we're part of trying to make the change in the right direction.
Thank you, Charles. It was an honor to speak to you, and it was an honor to speak to you, Gianna. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Mario.
Yeah, thank you, Mario, and thank you, Gianna.
Thank you both so much, and we hope that you'll tune in to us next time at Central Coast Voices on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. We'll be on Thursday, March 12th at 1 p.m. with host Fred Monroe and his guest from Family Care Network. Central Coast Voices is co-produced by the show's hosts in collaboration with KCBX. We depend on folks like you to continue these programs, so please join us with our spring pledge drive and donate today, or become a member with your monthly donation online at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Thanks for joining us.